Jesus says, you are Simon, son of John. You will be called Peter. And just talked about how strange that was, as introductions tend to go. And we wondered kind of what was going on in Simon's head with all that. Did he like the idea that his name would change from Simon to Peter? Maybe. Simon meant the listening one. Peter meant the rock. And so maybe that was something that, hey, okay, that's cool. Or maybe not. Maybe he said, I don't necessarily want my name changed. And was just kind of confused by the whole thing. But I proposed that meeting, that the introduction of what took place there with how Jesus responded, is, I think, pretty much exactly what Jesus says to everyone who meets him for the very first time. He says, you are who you are right now. You will become. You will become, if you follow me, if you accept me, you will become someone completely different than who you are now, and ultimately you will become what you were created to be. That's the beauty of it, because Jesus created this universe. And so that's a pretty exciting thing to think about. We're all made up of a lot of different things from a lot of different people: school teachers, friends, neighbors, parents, guardians, coaches, you name it. You know, and some of it's good, some of it's bad. But ultimately, you know, Jesus' goal, God's goal, is to take us from where we're at now to create someone completely different. And so I'm going to kind of tell stories. We're going to tell the stories of how that happened, and we'll see that happen in Peter's life, and tell stories of how it happened in my life as well, and in some instances in kind of similar fashion. So then we see then we move to the next story with Simon, which is, and we started with Mark's account. Remember, we said the Gospel of Mark is the cliff notes of the Gospels, of the Bible. It's all just the facts, ma'am. It's just condensed, and a lot of the frilly stuff isn't there. And so in this case, though, it's kind of ridiculous with this story, right? Because, and I said how I remember in Sunday school as a kid, when you're reading the Mark account, you know, Jesus is walking by the beach. He sees these guys fishing, cleaning up their gear, and he says, come follow me. And they leave everything, their fishing business, their gear, their livelihood, and they follow Jesus. And it's like, that's nuts. Okay, that's just not happening unless he's got some magic eyes or something going on. And then we turn to Luke's account, and we get the whole story. We get the backstory. You know, we get the rest of the story. And the rest of the story is pretty interesting. And the rest of the story is where I said, you know, Peter deals with the I am issue. And all of us must deal with the I am issue if we're going to go on to become what God created us to be. And what happens here is Jesus is teaching, and there's a crowd, and they're kind of crowding him against the edge of the beach to the water. And he asks if he could step out on the boat, give him a little more room, maybe be heard a little bit better, and teach while they're cleaning up the nets. And Peter says, fine. So they clean up the nets, and he does his talk. And when he finishes, he turns to Simon and just with this ridiculous request. He said, why don't just go ahead and cast the nets, just push out a little bit and cast the nets on the other side of the boat. And we know from the Greek that Peter's reaction really went something like this: did you really ask me to do that? I mean, you know, we've been fishing all night. We're professional fishermen. We've caught nothing. Plus, we've cleaned up all our gear and put it away, and you want us to take it back out and throw it. It just didn't make any sense at all. But he said, but, you know, because you say so, we'll do it. And he did it, and instantly the nets were so full of fish that they couldn't even pull them in. They had to bring another boat over to help them. And so then we talked about the crazy reaction of that. I said, what would you think the reaction of Peter would be at that point? And I told you what mine would be. I'd be jumping up and down on the boat, high-fiving Jesus, saying, look, we want you as a part of our business. Okay, we'll give you 51%. This is awesome. You know, we love to catch fish. We don't necessarily love fishing. So the idea that we can come out here in the morning, we don't like fishing at night. And, I mean, we'll be done by 8:30, you know. You just tell us which side of the boat to throw the nets in, and we're all good. But that's not what happens. What happens is kind of crazy. Simon falls prostrate on the ground on the boat in front of Jesus and says, in good American English, to what he said, "Get off my boat. Get off my boat. Go away from me, Lord. For I am a sinful man." And so we then talked about the fact that in every instance in Scripture where someone is up close and personal with God, they are scared to death. We've kind of watered that down to, oh, a healthy respect for whatever, the big man upstairs, you know, kind of a thing. But in reality, if every situation where you we go through the situation with Moses, right, the burning bush and all those instances, scared to death, hair standing on the back of the neck, scared for your life. We look at Isaiah 6, where he has the vision. And woe is me, for I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. So the closer you get to God, who is holy and righteous and perfect, the more we're made aware of the fact that we are not any of those things. And even living our best day, you know, of our best life, as believers, we're not there, you know? And so again, it's kind of an intimidating thing. It's why a lot of people kind of stay at an arm's distance from God. Hey, stay back a ways. I don't want to get too close because I don't want to be reminded, you know, every time I'm in God's word and praying and talking to him, I don't want to be reminded of my sin, of my inconsistencies, of my failures. And so that's the reaction. But then we see Jesus' reaction, which is really cool. Jesus kind of ignores the whole thing of him telling him to get off his boat. And he looks at him and says, "Don't be afraid. Follow me." Now, that's key. That what happened right there is key to what happens in the next story, I think. Okay? So before we get to the next story, you've heard the parachute story, and I tell this in conjunction with this next story because there's kind of some similarities that almost help you remember the story. So probably most of you have heard this. I'm not going to go through the whole thing as I've done before in long form, but for maybe some of you that haven't heard it, I'll give you the connection points to Peter's story. So after professional football, right after I stepped into full-time ministry, this was in Napa, California, and I'd always wanted to go parachuting. I was one of those risk-taking kind of guys. If it was adventurous and fun, I'm going to do it. I've just always been that way. So I got some guys from the church and got in the van, and we headed up to Yolo County, which is near UC Davis, in Northern California. And I didn't know what to expect. We pulled in, and I didn't expect this. It's like a plowed field, an old shack of a building, a wreck of an airplane over here. It's like, what on earth are we dealing with? And so we come up, and people are gathering, and we pay, I think it was $65 then. And there was probably about 25 people that had gathered to jump that day. Now, this was going to be, it's called parachuting then, and not skydiving, because skydiving only existed then for the professionals. Okay, you can skydive now first time because you're what? It's tandem. Yeah, you're strapped to the professional. Okay, but that didn't exist back then. So back then, if you wanted to go for the first time, it was going to be a military jump. It was going to be a static line jump, which is you're not going to be very high. We only jump from 3,000 feet. Okay, by comparison, if you go skydiving, you're jumping at 14,000 feet. Okay, so we're at 3,000 feet. Why? Because we're not free falling. We're going. The idea is as you exit the plane, the chute opens. It pulls the chute open, and so you're falling just to open chute. And that's where at 14,000 feet you would pull the chute at about 3. Okay, so you with me? Yeah. So we're there, and we go through the training. And the training goes something like this: you're gonna get 3 commands from the pilot. He's gonna say, "Feet out, get out, and go." And then you're to begin a cadence. So you're to feet out of the plane, then get out of the plane, and then go. And when you say go, you're to throw your arms out. You're to say arch 1,000, check 2,000, check 3,000. 3 seconds. By that time, the chute should be open. And if it's not, he said when he was teaching this, he said, if not, then you're in trouble, he said. And we're like, okay, what's the next word in the cadence? And he pauses a little bit and he says, and then you say, bad shoot. And we're like, really? That's what you came up with? Bad shoot. But he plays off that. He said, a bad shoot is a really, really bad shoot. And a bad shoot will never be a good shoot, not ever. You cannot fix it. Don't try to fix it. You don't have time. The only thing you do with a bad shoot is get rid of it. That leads you to the last thing you say in the cadence, which is cutaway. And when you say cutaway, you pull some steel class open, steel rings pop out, you put your thumbs in and pull. And when you do, that entire pack, bad shoot and all, leaves your body. It has a line attached to aluminum ripcord, pulls it open. It's spring-loaded, actually with a powder charge. Comes out very quickly, and everything's fine at that point. So we practiced. We took written tests, oral tests. We did role play in a mock airplane until he felt everybody had that down. And I was the first one to jump that day out of the 25, 30 people. Crawl into this little wreck of an airplane. I'm next to the door where there's no door. And we get up there, and I could tell this is the moment of truth. It's going to happen. Here it is. I've been telling people all my life I'm going to do this. And this pilot, who I've never met, don't know from Adam, says, feet out. Put my feet out. Immediately, they fly up, hit the side of the airplane. We're going 90 miles an hour. I fight it back down. He said, get out. And I get out, and at that point, only one foot fits on the little platform. The other one's dangling in space. I can feel the underside of the wing on my back, and I'm like, Hubbard, you idiot. This is the worst idea ever. And he says, go, and I just let go. Arch 1000, check 2000, check 3000. I had a bad shoot. Bad shoot. He said I'd been jumping people for 6 days a week for 20 years or something and never had a problem. Well, I don't know that that's true, but to me, I was the first. Now, they say that several things happen in a stressful, shocking situation, and they all seem to happen to me. One of the first things that happens is what they call brain lock, where because of the shock, your mind just locks on one particular thing, and you can't seem to get off it. And so I brain locked on bad shoot. I said it about 150 times. You know, bad shoot, oh, shoot, you know, bad shoot, over and over and over again, right? Now you say, well, that's no big deal. You ought to have some time to be able to collect yourself and go on. No, it is a really big deal. And here's why, because, and he talked about this, but it's so bizarre because you can't feel it. There's no sensation of falling and parachuting. None. You feel like you're floating. So I'm flying 125 miles an hour through the sky, and I don't have any sensation of that. I feel like I've got all the time in the world, but I don't. My entire jump from stepping out of the airplane to the ground was less than 30 seconds. So everything I'm telling you is happening like super, super fast. I feel like I have enough time, I don't, or whatever. And I got totally off track, okay, with everything. And finally I did what this, you know, young pastor should have done much earlier, and that was pray. This is a very short prayer, okay? No beginning, no end. It was just God, I just screamed out, God help. And God said, pull. I swear I heard him say, pull. He said, pull. I grabbed that and pulled, and I hit the ground. As soon as I pulled, I hit the ground. I was only 200 feet off the ground when that chute come out, and I was still carrying the bad chute. So I've hit and been hitting the NFL pretty hard, never been hit that hard. I thought they were going to have to dig to find me. And, you know, messed up my back, and a lot of physical problems, you know, went on from there. So I tell that story because it's got some corollary to what we see now with our text this evening with Simon. So let's look at this passage because this is our next story with Simon. I love this story. To set it up, they've just finished with the first of the two times that Jesus fed the 5,000. In one case, it was 5,000. Another time it was 4,000. It was actually much more than that because they're not counting kind of women and children and so forth. So it's a large crowd, and you know the story, the loaves and the fishes and so forth. And so they've done that whole thing. They're kind of cleaning up afterwards. And Jesus at this point is tired. I think he's worn out, as you can imagine, from all of that. And so they're going to go on across the lake of Galilee and meet there. And so what we think might have happened here, Jesus says, look, I'm going to go up here and get some alone time to pray. Why don't you guys go ahead and get in the boat? And one idea is that they would get in the boat and they'd just kind of not put up the sail, not just hang out on the shore a little bit and kind of move along, at which Jesus would finish, walk up, get on the boat, and they'd go across the lake. But what happens is this storm comes up, which is real typical in the Lake of Galilee, and it just starts blowing the boat across the lake. So pretty soon, out of their control, they're in the middle of the lake fighting this storm. And at that point, they've realized, okay, we're not meeting up with Jesus tonight. This is not happening. We'll catch him tomorrow. Okay, and that's where we pick up the story in Matthew chapter 14. Verse 25. It says, during the fourth watch of the night, so this is between 3 and 6 in the morning, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. That's something new. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they cried, and cried out in fear. Now you can imagine. I mean, the last thing they're thinking is, this is Jesus. Here's this person walking on the water. Like, what is going on with that? But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Now, I think with Simon at this point, he's like, where have I heard that before? The last time I was scared to death, you know, with him on the boat, he reacts in a way I didn't expect to say, don't be afraid, follow me. So at this point, Simon sees this whole situation differently than any of the other disciples. The other disciples at this point are cowering over, I think, on the backside of the boat in terror, fearful, not knowing what's going on. Simon immediately is his head's spinning and he's going, what is going on here? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid was followed by follow me. Do you think I could participate in this miracle? Maybe I could walk on the water too. How crazy is that? Okay? I mean, because that's what's happening here. So at that point, he says, Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, Jesus said. So now this is great, and this is very unlike Peter. Peter's very impetuous. I'm kind of surprised that Peter, you know, just passed over the asking permission and just, you know, feet out, get out, go. I'm just going to give this a shot. But he didn't. He was smart enough to know this is a pretty big deal and I probably ought to see if it's okay. And so he does two things. Number one, can I confirm, please, that it's actually you, Jesus? That's pretty important. Okay, it's actually you. Can I do this? Will you give me permission to do this? And in so doing, indicating to me that you've got my back, you've got me, and this is going to work. And Jesus says, come on, let's go. And at this point, it is like jumping out of the airplane. He had to be extremely nervous about what's going to happen here. And he puts his feet out, and he gets out, and he goes, and he is walking on the water. It's insane. Now we get to this time of the story, and I've heard this message preached. I've listened to it many, many, many years. Most of the time that I hear the story taught or preached, more time is spent on his failure than anything else. And then Peter took his eyes off of Jesus and thought about himself and what he was doing. And then we go on with, the failure of the whole thing. Forget about that. Peter is the only purely human being. Jesus was the God-man, right? Who walked on water in the history of what will be the history of this entire planet. That's exceptional. That's unbelievable. And now notice what happens. He does fail. He does have a bad shoot, okay? He got down out of the boat, walked on the water to Jesus, but when he saw the wind, He was afraid and he began to sink. And he cried out, Lord, save me. Now, if you stop here, kind of like we stopped at the when we were going through the other story, thinking about, okay, well, what would Jesus' reaction be here? Now, I've told you, I think, that my wife, you know, Melinda grew up in a Catholic, you know, kind of paradigm. Didn't go to church all the time, but her point is that she grew up with what she calls the angry God. Okay? I didn't, thank God, grow up with the angry God. I grew up with the graceful, merciful, you know, loving God. So, you know, she always has to fight that whole thing because her idea was that God is just this angry, you know, God who's just looking for everybody to screw up. And at the point that you do, he's going to beat you down and get you to, you know, fly straight and correct what, you know. And it's a completely different, you know, thing to the other, right? And so if you look at if I were to ask her at this point, if we were stopping, and her and I were doing this as a devotional, and I said, Melinda, what do you think Jesus did next? She would immediately go to, well, he probably stood there on the water and said, oh, Peter, man, you are something else. Took your eyes off me. Shouldn't have done that. I'm just going to let him sink for a while. You know, let him suck in some water. Maybe feel a little seaweed around his feet. And then I'll bring him up. You know, I want him to. That's not what happens here. This isn't the angry God. It says immediately. That word here is so great. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. Now, I don't know how close they were, right? Was he that close to Jesus when he took his eyes off? I don't think so. I think Jesus kind of instantly, immediately got there, and his hand was there to actually grab him before his hand went completely under the water, because you know how fast somebody sinks, right? And so immediately he grabs him and he pulls him up. Jesus reached out his hand, caught him, and he said, you have little faith. He said, why did you doubt? And now I always ask this question. I've never heard anybody ask it, telling the story, but I always ask this question. How do you think Peter got back to the boat? You think he swam? You think Jesus said, you know, look, you tried this once. Didn't work too well. I'll walk, you swim, you know. No, I don't think so at all. I think together, the two of them, maybe arm in arm, I don't know, walk back to the boat. How cool is that? How great is that? So what happens here is, this is the message, I think. It's safe with Jesus. When you're doing something that he's calling you to do, asking you to do, wanting you to do, within the sphere of faith and trust in him, to take those risks. The worst that can happen is you fail. And trust me, you will fail. I have failed many, many times. But the worst that can happen is you then can feel Jesus' hand in yours as he pulls you up out of that failure and out of that situation and then walks with you forward to the next situation, okay? It's safe to fail. It's safe to fail. And it's far better to be a follower who fails than one who fails to follow. Far better to be a follower who fails than one who fails to follow. I find so many people are so kind of timid and scary. And you know, nobody likes to mess up. Nobody likes to fail. Nobody likes, but you know, you get to the point where you say, and so we don't take any risk. We don't take any risk. We don't step out by faith and trust and use the superpower, if you will, that we have with Christ in us. See, do you realize that Christ is in you as a believer? Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ. I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in this body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loves me and gave himself for me. Wow, that's a superpower. That's a superpower. And so when it comes to something as simple as taking the risk of sharing Christ with someone, inviting them to church, talking about spiritual things, letting everybody know around you, I am a Christian, I follow Christ. That can be risky. It can in today's world, big time, depending on what your work environment is and what your situation is. What are we afraid of? What are we afraid of? So that I hope that encourages you and challenges you and causes you to think about what are some of those things in your life that God wants you to put your feet out, get out and go, and trust him on. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this lesson from Peter.